Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, Go ahead, my daughter. So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean between the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they answered. Boaz asked the overseers of harvesters, Who does that young woman belong to? The overseer replied, She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the fields where men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her head to the ground. She asked him, Why have I found such favor in you that you have noticed me, a foreigner? Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord, she said. You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, Let her gather among the sheaves, and don't repinium her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles, and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and amounted it to about an imph. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over from when she had eaten. Her mother-in-law asked her, Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed the man who took notice of you. This is the word of the Lord.
Let me pray just before I start. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for your word. Thank you for the way in which you speak to us throughout the whole Bible as a whole story. And I pray that you speak through what I've prepared tonight to each and every person here. Let there not be any barrier that stops your word, your truth, from entering into their hearts and minds, Lord. And help us to be refreshed and to see you in a new way, I pray. Amen. Okay, so when I asked in staff meeting earlier, I said, why is it Sunday night? And they were like, it's Ruth. And I said, oh, what? Which bit? And they were like, the whole of it. But actually, as I prepared and as I read and looked at it, I thought, sort of, actually, it fitted really, really well with what we've been doing in the Youth 412 small group. It fits really well into the actual program by some sheer amazing fluke. Well done, Rob, for putting Ruth just here. Pretty good. But also, it's the first day of Advent, and my daughter will kill me, but one of her friends said last week, yay, it's Christmas on Sunday! And Libby went, no, it's Advent. No, it's Christmas on Sunday! No, it's Advent. And it's, you might be a bit like that. You might be, yes! Or you might be a little bit like I feel sometimes, especially this last week with Lucy being a bit poorly, a little bit like one of those cartoons that's got their head going multiple ways all at the same time, thinking, how on earth am I going to do everything I need to do before the All-Age Service on the 22nd of December, let alone Christmas Day? you might have one of those two mindsets. Either that, yay, exciting, we've got the lights up in church and everything. Or can you be both? Because sometimes I find myself stuck in the middle. I get excited by things, but then also like, yeah, but I've got that to do, and then excited. And just kind of, again, find my head going from one to the other, to one to the other. But actually, we're at the beginning of the preparation days before Christmas. We're not at Christmas just yet. We're in the 24 days of expectation of the hope that is coming. And Ruth's story is part of the preparation for Christmas. She has a part to play in the family line of David. She has a part to play in Jesus' family line. Her story wouldn't be out of place on a big screen. It'd probably make a great Christmas blockbuster, wouldn't it? I'm not sure I'd go and see it because actually I'm going to see Star Wars, and that's the biggest Christmas blockbuster of this year. Enough said, and I know there's at least two people in the congregation that agree with me. But it wouldn't be, it would be kind of, because it's got everything. It's got everything a blockbuster needs. It's got tragedy, drama, romance, and a happy ending right at the end of it. But as I said, I'll be watching Star Wars as it draws to a conclusion and brings the whole nine movies finally to a sad end. But apparently I was reliably informed there's pretty much an individual movie for every single major character coming because Disney own it. But there we go. Enough said about Star Wars. The story begins with Naomi and her two widowed daughter-in-laws in a foreign land after the death of her husband. And Naomi decides to return home and her daughter-in-laws go with her. But one, Orpha, decides to take a different path to Ruth. She chooses to go home. But Ruth, the Moabite, commits to Naomi against Naomi's pleading. Naomi says, no, please don't, go home. And then part of the reason she says this is because actually the Moabite people were the despised, hated enemies of Israel at this time. They didn't like them. They didn't get on at all. But Ruth, through being compassionate and loyal, was taking a massive risk by sticking by Naomi. And then to top it all off, they arrive in Bethlehem and they're penniless and destitute. But it's the beginning of the harvest season. Fortunately for them, Israel had, and you kind of heard a bit about it in the part that Narissa read for us, Israel had laws to protect the poor, to try and keep landowners humble and generous, to ground them in the earth with the people. Old Testament law insisted that grain dropped during harvest was left for the poor to collect so they could feed themselves, so they could care for themselves, even though they may not have had a job. And Boaz noticed Ruth, and he had compassion on her. He had compassion on her, and he'd heard her story on this woman that he didn't actually really know that well, and she was a Moabite. And he instructed his men to deliberately drop grain in her path so that she had plenty to collect to care for herself and Naomi. Boaz knew something of her character because he'd heard of her journey and her story, and he knew a little bit about her but didn't necessarily know absolutely everything. And actually, when you think about it, maybe both Boaz and Ruth, they're both heroes, aren't they? They're both heroes of our story. One to Naomi and one to Ruth herself. And all good movies need heroes, don't they? Especially Christmas movies. Or just people that make daily decisions that honour their commitment to both themselves and to the people around them, and most importantly, their commitment to God. Daily little decisions that enable them to be part of God's kingdom story. Naomi and Ruth began in a place of sorrow, a tough place. They journeyed together and saw their lives redeemed by God through the actions of a compassionate man. In the book of Ruth, God isn't mentioned much, not much at all, but actually you can see him at work through in many, many places, in many situations, the people, their actions, working the bigger picture out for you and I. That important part that the story has in the whole story of the Bible, the whole story of our salvation. Old Testament rules brought redemption and an outpouring of love. And Paul says this in Timothy, to take hold of your eternity, and that we're citizens of heaven in Philippians. Both things which to me mean that we aren't to be bound by the rules of do and don't do, or X and Y. But actually, we're to live in freedom that comes from being a disciple. We're to live in the freedom that comes from making daily decisions for God. Daily decisions to live an abundant life. That abundant life that Jesus promises in John 10:10. And I was thinking about it as we were just thinking about that compassion thing, and it's just amazing, isn't it? The way, the compassion that Boaz had, the compassion that God has for us. If we follow God's pathways for our life, wherever that leads or whatever that means, we need to learn to take our part in God's kingdom story. Because to fail is only our first attempt in learning, surely. Because actually each step we take, we need to take bold steps like Ruth, bold steps a little like Boaz, actually showing compassion on someone that his people really probably didn't like very much. Some people make history, others just a part of something that changes the world forever. Which would you say Boaz and Ruth are? First Ruth and then Boaz see those around them through the eyes of compassion, through God's eyes, with a compassionate heart of Christ. And we, the stuff we're doing in the youth, we're going through the Beatitudes, and something it says in there, and I'm going to get you to talk about it a little bit more in a moment, it talks about actually looking at people through compassion. And I thought, oh, I could, and it's like you sort of do this. But actually, have you ever thought that what happens if you get your glasses and you get a Sharpie, and then you go like that, and you go like that, and like that, and then, I'll do it on that one as well, why not? And you go like that. I've got the advantage because you can't really draw on your eyes. And then you draw two little hearts on your glasses. And that's the thing, is we were challenged, and we were going to challenge the young people to go away and kind of walk around like this. But actually, it's a bit like drawing hearts on your glasses. Because actually, that's the same way Jesus sees us. He looks at us, and God sees us through a compassionate eyes, through loving eyes. Don't worry, I will get rid of the Sharpie or whatever it is on my glasses, because actually, I really can't see my notes. So it's not coming off, but there we go. So it is really, don't worry. And unfortunately, I do have another pair of glasses. There we go, all gone. But that's it, isn't it? It's actually... How often do we walk around and see others through the compassionate eyes of Christ? How often do we kind of turn away from people? How often do we kind of walking down the street and look and think, I'm going to go over that side of the street. I'm not going to go near that person because they look a bit strange. Ruth should have run away from Israel because they hated her country of origin. They had a bad history with her people group. But she stuck it out with Naomi. And Boaz, once he learned where Ruth was coming from, where she was at, he should have had nothing to do with her. He should have had nothing to do with this Moabite woman. But actually, he chose to have compassion. He saw her through compassionate eye. And he made sure she was cared for, and he dared to be different and stepped out and stepped into things that wouldn't have been the norm around that time. So, question for you to discuss while I try and clean my glasses. Okay, either with the person next door or the people around you, and I'm not going to give you as long as normally we give you to go and get tea, but if you do want to top up, feel free. What I want you to talk about with those around you is this. What stops you from looking at others through the compassionate eyes of Christ? What are the barriers to you seeing other people through hearts on your glasses, for example? Off you go. Okay, one more minute and I'm going to call you to order and carry on. Okay, as the those making their tea find their seats, just call out some of the things that stop us looking through eyes of compassion. Frustrations, busyness, fear, judgment, anything else? Experience, yeah? I wrote down hurt, fear, unforgiveness of ourselves or others as well. There are lots and lots of things that stop us just taking a moment to show compassion to the people we come across. But what I want to do is just spend a moment reflecting. We said about busyness, we said about frustration, we said about unforgiveness of ourselves or others, dislike or hatred, hurt or fear, the things that stop us from having compassion or acting compassionately. What I want to do is I just want you to spend a moment, just ask God to prompt in your heart if there's something that stops you from doing that. And in the worship later on, you might like to, there's some post-its and pens here and at the front. If you just feel that God said, actually, give this to me and I'll deal with it. Give this to me and I'll carry it. Give this to me and I'll journey through it with you. Just jot it down maybe and put it at the foot of the cross in worship later. Maybe it's, and as a commitment, maybe it's committing to forgiving someone or forgiving yourself or just taking a moment, setting a reminder on your phone that just gives a moment each day at some point just to stop and breathe, just to stop and say, is there someone that needs your compassion now, Lord? Or to put down fears, maybe, or stereotypes that you hold. I invite you to do that later in the worship if you feel that would be right for you. Sometimes I get to hear some really inspirational speakers at various conferences, at various places and parts of the country. And in a seminar recently at the National Youth Ministry Weekend, which is the best conference weekend in the whole calendar year for me and Chris, partly because it's at this great place where they do yummy food. And it's got an amazing thing. The wall has just dropped from the ceiling. We've never been able to see it, and we're kind of gutted that we haven't, but they can convert a space and the wall has fallen out the ceiling, apparently a bit Thunderbirds-y, so I've been told. But I went to a seminar on raising young leaders, and I was struck by the probable percentage, that's a mouthful, of encouragement versus neutral or negative reinforcement that is often present in leaders. The guy who was leading was doing some research, and I include myself in that. And actually, you could say, or a leader could say, or a person could say, oh, it's because I'm so busy. I don't have time to be encouraging. I just want to get the job done. Lots of plates to keep spinning. Or I'm kind of a task-focused guy, so I get the task sorted and then worry about the people. And that really challenged me. And in the week that followed, I found myself observing others, seeing encouragement in action in people that had roles in far bigger organisations than I ever have held or ever will hold. Observing in me how busyness often means I miss the point. I miss that God moment, or that God-ordained moment where I need to have compassion, or the right kind word, or the right encouraging word would lift that person or those people. And then you think about, and then also looked at, if you think about how Jesus encouraged those he led. He didn't just need to get something done. He was probably a pretty busy person, I guess. But he always took that moment to lift people up. He encouraged those he led. He encouraged those he journeyed with. He didn't just need to get the thing done. He had time. He was never too busy to miss the point or the person needing him at that moment. And he spent time with the Father to prepare so he could see, feel, and hear the call of God to make history. How often are we so focused on the task? So, and it is that, like I said earlier, it's that preparation time for Christmas. How focused are we on getting to point X or getting this done that we actually miss the point? We actually miss the point at which God's kind of, in the worship earlier, we had this picture of this Perspex screen, the person behind it kind of trying to get through. And almost, how often is it that we're so kind of focused that God's kind of the other side of this clear screen waving and shouting and he can't hear us because we're like, right, we've got to get there. Got to get to that point. And Christmas, with all the added pressure from all kinds of directions, adds to that busyness. But it's the time of preparation for Jesus's birth, for celebrating his birth. And we get daily opportunities to take our part in that story and that journey towards what's going to happen in eternity. The people in the book of Ruth make many decisions that were meant that they were part of God's story. They're part of his kingdom story. As I said earlier, they're part of the lineage that led to Jesus. The main characters saw through eyes of compassion. They chose to see others in a different way to the way the cultural norm. And they acted on what they saw God doing around them. So like I was saying about that seminar that I went to, I observed those people and the way that they just inspired you by just being so bouncy, they were almost Tigger-like. And that must have an impact in the places that they have led and the people that they've taken forward. And each one of us, I said, I think it was the last youth led, or maybe the one before that, I have no idea. But each one of us is a leader in our own right, in our own spaces, be it at work, be it at school, be it in a church, we're even in our families. So often we are leaders because we have responsibility or oversight of another. Jesus sees us through eyes of compassion, doesn't he? He spent time being present with people, and he took action for our salvation. And that's how I linked, for me, that's how I was kind of trying to work out how to link this big story of Ruth, this blockbuster movie of the Old Testament, to Jesus. And not only is it key in his story, in his birth, in his family life, his worldly family life, it's actually a great example of God at work in the everyday. great example of God working through normal people like you and I, taking compassionate actions. What would it look like to be content with a possible chaotic Christmas? What would that look like for those of you that have no ideas what I just said? Ordered chaos. Some people's Christmases might be like that. I mean, mine is sometimes. But what would it look like if we were just content with Christmas taking place and happening? And yes, we engage in celebration, and yes, we share gifts. But actually, in allowing us to journey with God and allowing some things to maybe not be quite right, we are able to see God compassionately at work in us through this Advent period. Every day, we're able to spend time just breathing and waiting and seeing what actions he wants us to take, who he wants us to see through Christ-like, compassionate eyes. What would that look like? We're challenging the young people to journey with us every single day in Advent on Instagram or Facebook with acts of both compassion but also moments of pause. So each evening we're going to share something on Instagram that just either challenges them to do something that helps them see others more compassionately or helps them just stop and be still. Both things that Jesus did, just to see what would happen this Advent in those around them if they spend time doing that. And actually, we've already talked about, haven't we? I've already talked about actually the things that stop us from being compassionate with others. Maybe tonight is actually, it's not about committing to doing those daily decisions. It's actually about committing to giving it to God to act and work and see what he does. So are you willing to see others through eyes of compassion, to ensure you spend time being present with people or God daily this Advent, and take action on what God prompts you to do for those around you, like Boaz did, like Ruth did?